Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
It's been a pretty eventful week since we last spoke. After Liverpool stunned Chelsea 4-3 in one of the most chaotic games that I've ever seen in my entire life on Wednesday night, the WSL trophy seemed to be safely on its way to Manchester. And then Jonas Eidevall came to the rescue of his best buddy, and Arsenal have thrown the title race wide open once more. We're here to make sense of all the twists and turns of the past week. We also look back on Fran Kirby's career at Chelsea after a very emotional farewell to the club, and discuss Liverpool's credentials to become one of a new big five next season after they beat and leapfrogged Manchester United. Rach, I mean, it's been so chaotic since we last saw each other. Obviously, happy bank holiday weekend. It's a fabulously sunny day as ever. How's life been in the past week?
Absolutely crazy. Oh my God. The Barclays WSL has delivered once more. And it was an absolute wild weekend. Yeah, it was. I was back in Dublin for a few days. Flew over early on Sunday morning to Manchester to get there in time for the game, and I'm so glad I did.
I mean, mate, I'd say, like, what's the point in going to the theatre or, like, to comedy or, like, to the bowling? Because you don't need anything more exciting than turning on to BBC One or the FA Player or Sky or whatever and just watching the WSL unfold. So it's obviously going to be quite a difficult one for you to pick out a moment of the weekend, but I've got to ask.
I think I'm going to go... I'm just going to give the whole moment to Stina Blackstenius.
Fair.
I think, you know, all the way up to the 88th minute, I think we thought this potentially the WSL title was almost done and dusted. And I really want the title to go down to the last week end. I just think it'd be so exciting. And for Stina Blackstenius to step up from the 88th minute onwards and just deliver. Love scoring against Manchester City. Blew the title race right open. It just, yeah, it was peak Barclays, and I think that's the moment of the week, because I bet there were so many different people around, different kind of fan emotions around the WSL. You'd Man City fans being like, oh, good Lord. You'd Arsenal fans obviously delighted. There's definitely Chelsea fans out there cheering on Arsenal. I would have loved to have been in somewhere, wherever the Chelsea team were. I know it was a home game, but when that second goal went in and suddenly they were like, oh my God, the pendulum has swung back. There's a chance. So yeah, I just think it was just great. It was just so exciting.
I feel like the trophy, in terms of sort of where it was on its journey to Manchester, was around Birmingham level. And then all of a sudden, this weekend's results has kind of taken it back down to like St Albans kind of thing. thanks for asking again, Rach. My moment of the weekend has definitely got to be the beautiful tribute paid to Steph Horton. Last game at the stadium, at the Joy Stadium, last home game with City, obviously, before she retires this season. And I just think it was such a... The crowd was incredible. There was loads of these gorgeous, like, blue banners with thank you, Steph, for everything you've done. And she had this beautiful interview after the game, and it was sort of really... it was quite emotional. Like, and her nan and dad were in the crowd, and they've obviously followed her journey sort of around the globe, you know, across, obviously, the Olympics, the World Cups and things, and obviously with City, so...
They had a lovely tribute video for her. So God love her, she had to stand in the tunnel for ages while this lovely tribute video played with messages from current and former players and people involved at Manchester City on both the women's and the men's side and people who've been involved in her career. So that was really nice. And it was quite nice actually that it was Arsenal that were the other team. Mm-hmm. So they obviously made that guard of honour, and she obviously had been an Arsenal player as well. So there was a lot of love from the Arsenal fans as well as obviously the Manchester City fans, because she's a Manchester City legend. But it was really nice to hear them chanting for Steph as well. So yeah, it was very, very nice.
Let's get into it, Rach, because it has been one of the wildest weekends in the title race. It's been a beautiful weekend of ups and downs and lefts and rights. I'm fuming because this is probably the jammiest result that I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, you go from Man City basically having the lead against Arsenal. It looked like it was fairly wrapped up. I mean, Arsenal were knocking at the door. All of a sudden, Man City lose. Chelsea... obviously, you know, have to get the win, but also they've got to make up that massive goal difference. And what do they go and do? They score 8 goals. And I just feel like they just won't go to bed. Like, I just...
they don't know when they're done. God damn it.
I just find it so infuriating that you kind of think, okay, well, that was kind of the last nail in the coffin. Oh, no. And then they resurrect themselves like zombies from the... And I'm fuming about it, but also incredibly happy. So yeah, Chelsea are back in the driving seat for the title race. They lost 4-3 against Liverpool on Wednesday, leaving them 6 points behind with just one game in hand. And then Man City suffered a shock 2-1 defeat to Arsenal with 2 goals in the 89th and 92nd minute, thanks to your Beza, Steiner, on Sunday afternoon. Chelsea then beat Bristol City 8-0 last night, meaning they have a goal difference of plus 46 and Man City have a goal difference of plus 45. Let's get stuck in to the Man City game first. They led for over 70 minutes after Lauren Hemp scored a pretty worldy goal. Back to the goal. On the replay, she didn't even look up and see the goal. I didn't even kind of... It was just like on the turn, bang, straight in the bottom corner. Zinsberg had absolutely no chance. You were there, Rach. Talk me through the ups and the downs, the trials and tribulations of that game, because it's annoying.
Really competitive first kind of 10-15. I thought when Man City got the goal, it obviously lifted them. I thought Arsenal struggled to create any real clear-cut chances. And I don't think either goalkeeper were hugely troubled in the first half. Kiara Keating had one good save to make early on. But it did feel like the game was a little bit flat after the goal, but City were still the better team in the first half.
Definitely dominated.
Arsenal definitely came out in the second. Like, as the second half went on, Arsenal got better and better. But it felt like it was going to be another one of those days for the Gunners where they were in and around the box, they were getting into the box, they were creating these opportunities and they just weren't going to score them. And there was a Caitlin Ford opportunity where she was practically one-on-one. She had a defender on her back, but like practically one-on-one with Keating. And all she had to do was put it across the goal and she somehow snatched it wide. And it was one of those, it was harder to miss than to score. And I just thought when that didn't happen, I thought it's not going to happen for Arsenal. They're not going to get back into it. And like, you know, part of me was thinking like City were being a little bit, I don't want to say complacent, but I feel like they hadn't comfortably won the game. You know, they weren't like 2-0 or 3-0 up, not at all. And they'd spent a lot of the second half kind of having to deal with this Arsenal coming forward. So that was where I was kind of like, it kind of felt like it was done from an Arsenal perspective. But if you were a City fan, you'd be like, Jesus, it's not done. Do you know that kind of way? So Tim Stillman put up a tweet afterwards, which I thought was really good, when he said the winner was a nice illustration of how the substitutions changed the game for Arsenal.
Absolutely.
He said they were They were great with the ball in their own third for the whole game, but lacked in the middle and final thirds in the first half. Little came on and secured the middle, and Stina sorted out the final third. And that kind of like, because I did think Arsenal were struggling again to problem solve. Mm-hmm. Again, Beth Mead looked the most likely to score, but because she was playing out wider, didn't always get those opportunities. And then those substitutions came on, and I don't know what happened with City. I don't really know what happened to them in the second half in terms of trying to actually put the game to bed. Mm-hmm. It was almost like they were just trying to hold off Arsenal. And you can't do that against a team like that.
Well, I felt really sorry for me because I think obviously she was out on the wing, but I think she was delivering some pretty decent crosses. And like there was a few that just sort of whipped across the face of goal in that kind of no man's area, no man's land, where you kind of think, OK, the goalkeeper could come for it, but she wasn't. And you think if anyone just gets a small, tiny toenail on that, that's
she
a goal.
Needed her on the end of it.
Literally that. And I think you could see the frustration as well. The camera would pan to her and she was like, you know, do better. You know, I'm delivering them in the same area. You need to sort of, you know, be anticipating that that's going to happen. I didn't see much of that from Arsenal, like you kind of said. But I think that triple sub, effectively, that's Arsenal, isn't it? Their biggest strength has always been how many attacking threats they have. And I think bringing in Blackstenius, bringing on Catley, bringing on Ford, it was just like a determination from Jonas Eidevall to effectively throw the attacking kitchen sink at the game. And it was absolutely beautiful. It was beautiful to watch. And Blackstenius, I mean, you know, some of the goals that she scores, they're not often the, you know, the most pretty goals. I mean, you know, we've seen her sort of fall up and get over and come down and sort of like knock it with her
spin
head
around.
Or her shoulder or like spin around, pirouette. But she puts the ball in the back of the net and I think she's clinical. And I think, you know, that both teams only had four shots on target, but you know, for Blackstenius to be put in two of those in the last dying 10 minutes of the game, I thought was just absolutely, yeah, it blew my mind. And I think yeah. that Gareth Taylor was kind of saying after the game, you know, a draw would have been a fair result. And I think actually on balance, yeah, a draw probably would have been yeah. a fair result. But at the end of the day, if you're going to let someone come into the game like that and not score, not convert some of your earlier chances to kind of secure and tap up the game a little bit earlier on, then what are you expecting? So, yeah, I think it was a great game to watch because it was so dramatic and obviously everything did kind of turn on it.
I loved how the fixtures fell, right? And I appreciate that Emma Hayes essentially made out like they'd lost the league. I think the way she looked at it was it's mathematically possible, but it's completely out of their hands. And what was incredible was if you're a team that need to win a game and score goals, you're going to want to play the team that's just been relegated. Mm-hmm. And if the other team above you have to play someone, you want them to be playing the next best team that's snapping at your heels, right? Arsenal. So it's just the way the kind of fixtures fell. And to think in any way that it was done and dusted, like to assume that Man City were just going to beat Arsenal. Like Arsenal won the reverse leg. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen Chelsea banging the goals against Bristol. It was almost like you could see it happening, but then you didn't believe it could happen. Do you know that kind of way? The way the league has gone this season, you were like, this is what should happen, but I don't know if it will happen. And now I can't decide which way it's going to go. So yeah, it definitely delivered in that respect.
What I really respected about Arsenal is that they kind of treated it like it was their title race, like it was their title race winning game. And obviously they can't win the WSL, but they can effectively still come second. And I think there was a kind of like, there was just an energy about it. Like Jonas Eidevall's response to the scene of Blackstenius' goals, he went absolutely wild. And I think the loveliest thing, I suppose, for scene of Blackstenius coming up towards the end of the summer is that her contract is up and now she's probably added another two or three zeros to what to her asking price.
There was a moment in the game when City had gone ahead and the Arsenal fans started chanting that, well, we like you better than Chelsea anyway, kind of vibes. Some of the fan chants were so quick, like they'll just come up with stuff on the spot, and that was pretty funny.
Well, another moment we've kind of got to discuss, and obviously it was my moment of the weekend. Steph Horton, obviously last game with City at home. They still got Aston Villa to play, but it was her last home game in front of a home crowd. Obviously the crowd were all amazing, had these banners out. Her nan and her dad were there and she was on the bench. And like when Lauren Hemp scored, like she was over in the huddle, like she was talking to the players. You could see her kind of like, you know, really G-ing them up. Like this is a game, you know, not that she was saying it's a game for me, but I think the players kind of wanted to get that win for her, that, you know, she deserves it. But she didn't get any minutes. So we had a question in from Holly. She said, should Gareth Taylor have given Steph Horton a run out for her final home game with Man City? I appreciate it was a very close game. You know, you want to have your best squad out there. You know, you do have an incredible defensive line. You don't want to upset that, especially in the last 10 minutes of the game when, you know, Arsenal were come knocking and all the subs were being made. But I do think she deserved, there's nothing like that feeling. And I think maybe it's a personal thing because I feel like I was almost robbed of that feeling. Like, I didn't know that my last game was going to be my last game. And I'm not entirely convinced that maybe Steph knew that her last game was going to be her last game. There would have been something about that game that she maybe anticipated that she would get those couple of minutes. And maybe had it fallen differently, maybe had Man City been 3-0 up, you know, with sort of like 10 minutes or so to go, maybe she would have gone on. Appreciate it's a tense one, but at the same time, there is absolutely nothing like having your home crowd there to kind of celebrate an incredible career. And arguably, maybe Man City wouldn't be in the position that they are in at the moment had it not been for like all the kind of accolades and the, you know, what she'd done for the team in the first place. And her nan and dad were there. And I just think it would have been a really touching moment to have at least 1 or 2 minutes on the pitch to kind of say a proper goodbye to her career and to City. But Rach, go on. Shit on that. Go on.
Well, I was actually really surprised at the amount of people, particularly people involved in the game, who expected her to get minutes. Mm-hmm. And I obviously, big fan, I think she's done incredible things for the game. But for me, you can't be sentimental in a title race.
And I think there's always the room game, for sentimentality, always.
If the game had allowed for it, and I think Gareth Taylor and her probably had this conversation beforehand, if they're in a situation where the game allows for it, absolutely. But when you're 1-0 down in the 87th minute, and I know, Sue, I saw you on Twitter put the reply to some people saying that Man City made a defensive substitution on the 87th minute, so there was no reason why they couldn't bring in Steph. They made a defensive substitution and they brought in Alana Kennedy, who is their, would be an automatic, their first kind of go-to defensive substitute, and has played, I think, over 15 games in the WSL, has over 1,000 minutes under her belt this season. Are you going to risk that moment and bring someone in who's been involved in 3 matches in the WSL and played 33 minutes this season? And I just think, had that been Steph that had gone in at 87 minutes and they went and conceded 2 goals in the next 3 minutes, the kind of narrative that would have gone on around that. And I think Taylor may have taken some criticism had he done that. So for me, I just, in a professional game, and I understand it, but I just don't think when you're in the most important game of your season, you're on the back foot, you're in the 87th minute and you're 1-0 up and the other team are knocking on the door, that you'd make that substitution. And I don't even think Steph would have expected to come on in that moment. I think she wouldn't have wanted the sentimentality to overrule what was best in the game in that moment.
But I do think, like, in those moments, sometimes you need the 1%, and sometimes the 1% is not the talent on the pitch, it's the emotional, like, it's the emotional side of it. I mean, when we were going to have our, you know, our WSL winning Spurs game, Juan Amoroso in the changing room had put together this PowerPoint slide and it was set to, I can't remember the music now, it was like this beautiful, like, I think it was A Whole Lot of History, actually, by One Direction. I'm not a massive fan of them, but in the moment, it's quite powerful to kind of see all like your favourite moments of the season. And he played this to us, like, as we were about to step onto the pitch. So we had 3 minutes, this beautiful footage. And more than anything in the world, we were remembering that as we stepped out onto the pitch. And I think Steph Horton, because they would have wanted to get that result for her, her being on that pitch, I think, could have garnered potentially more, I don't know, more to play for, effectively. I think it actually could have spurred them on a bit more to get that win. And she is also a calm, experienced head. It's not like Steph Horton comes on and all of a sudden it's like, oh, Christ, like, we've given it to, you know, an inexperienced, like, 14-year-old.
It's not about that. Like, it's about how much in-game you've been playing recently. It's, for me, not about experience. It's about being thrown in after playing 33 minutes across 3 games. It's,
she's been in far higher, like, demanding, intense situation, more pressurised situations in her lifetime. And I think, like, yeah, I think that was a lost opportunity for me, and I do feel sorry for her. I know she probably won't come out and say anything, but I do feel quite sorry for her. So but it does not detract, and I think even asked, you know, Ellen White was very quick to kind of say to Gareth Taylor when he came over to do the post-match interview, and he said, well, when you think of Steph, you won't think of this game, but you will think of her career, which is
absolutely
very, very, very pragmatic from Taylor. So, yeah.
And correct, yeah.
All right. Moving on then to Jamie McJamison. Later on Sunday evening, Chelsea put 8 past Bristol City in Emma Hayes' final home game as manager. She'd written off the title in midweek. I mean, do we think that was all mind games? So I've got the tweet. She said, "I think the title is done. Of course, mathematically, it's not, but I think the title is done." So very clear. You can't misconstrue those words. It's effectively saying defeat. We're defeated this season. You know, we're out of all four competitions.
She said, I don't think the title will be coming to Chelsea.
It's not going to be our year. So then we kind of like get to post-match, her words to the Chelsea fans. "Let me be clear. It's not fucking over. There's no time for sentimentality.
All work weeks
are cancelled. There's a title to be won. This group of players taught me something so special this week that you never give up." Complete U-turn. I mean, Rach, what do you make of all this?
Well, first of all, everyone's going, "Yes, Emma, there's no place for sentimentality." And then some people are going, "Why didn't you play Steph? God damn it." I thought the reaction to the post-match interview was really interesting. And I thought there was a real over-the-top post-mortem into how she reacted. They were understandably emotional. They'd just come off the back of this massive Champions League game where they'd been so close. They'd absolutely emptied the tank. They'd had the most bonkers feckin' game against Liverpool where they kept going, "We're in it. We're winning. We're not. We're back in it. It's gone. We're here again. Oh, no." And, you know, your emotions are all over the place. And managers are going to be emotional just like players are going to be emotional. I also think it was really smart of her to take the pressure off her team. And by saying what she did, her team are going to turn around and go, "Hang on a fucking second. No way, we can do this. We can win." There's probably a little bit of then like subliminal to Manchester City. "Yeah, be grand, you've won it. Just calm down and relax. You don't need to go out and go mad against Arsenal." And it just, I didn't think it was that difficult to decipher. And I thought some of the reaction to it was really over the top. And I think people really went in on her. And I just, you know, yeah, she said some things that weren't right throughout the season, but I really didn't think this was a moment to put so much attention on. And I think she took the pressure off her players, and she said it yesterday that her players taught her something this week, that you never stop fighting until it's over. And so, no, I wasn't. I think had Man City won, it might have been a different situation last night. But I think as soon as Manchester City lost, yeah, Chelsea were going to score, and they were going to score a lot against Bristol. And I think, you know, it was always going to be go one of two ways for Bristol. Like, you're either going to really step up and be like, "We've nothing to lose." But I think with a team like Chelsea, once they put in one or two goals, and for it to be a penalty that kind of unlocks things and stuff, it can be hard. So that
was
the game.
And when your season's already been decided. Yeah. I just think it was, even though it is a U-turn, I think you're completely right. Like, it was very realistic to appreciate that had the loss on the Liverpool game was probably, on balance, the title race over. And then no one expected, I mean, I expected the Bristol City win. I absolutely expected that. But did I expect 8-0? Did I expect 8 goals? No. And I think we were kind of saying, like, let's give some respect to Bristol City. Yes, they have conceded. Yes, obviously they've not picked up points this season. Yes, they're going to be relegated. But when you've actually looked, like you said, Rach, at some of Bristol City's games, they have put up a seriously decent fight against good opposition. And they have been very close to causing some serious upsets. So it was just chaos. But yeah, I think going back to like the Liverpool game, I think, you know, you've got to, it was one of the most fabulous games that I've seen in the WSL. I think it was
best
probably
game
one
of
my favourite games of the WSL season. I think there was a moment, there was a 3-minute period that there were 3 goals in 3 minutes. It was like the pendulum just kept swinging. And it was like Aggie Beaver-Jones and it was Leanne Kiernan. And then it was Tegan Micah's own goal. And then at the death, I mean, the Gemma Bonner. I mean, there was so much battle and heart coming from Liverpool to get back into the game. I think, you know, they were just so confident that they were going to get the win.
The second half especially, because I think Bristol took a little bit of time to get into it and they were a little bit passive in their defending initially in terms of like they'd let the ball bounce or they'd let the Chelsea player get on the ball before they engaged rather than trying to make that 50-50 challenge or whatever. And then I think when they went in at halftime, it was only 1-0. They knew that they could be in it. And my God, are their set pieces lethal. Marie Hobinger with 3 assists from 3 corners. That's never happened before.
On comms, I think, for that game, someone said that Chelsea only conceded 2 or 3 goals from set pieces. And then to have that doubled in one game was just a complete, I mean, that was the brilliance of it. Yeah.
Yeah, like their press was really good. I think they struggled, Chelsea struggled with that. They struggled to deal with Mia Enderby. My God, she was unreal. She was such a handful. Yeah, Liverpool were superb.
Well, Chelsea now have two games remaining. Spurs on Wednesday, May the 15th, and Manchester United on the final day on the 18th. Man City have Aston Villa on the final day. So, Rach, got to put you on the sword, mate. You've got Bunny there. If you want to defer to Scotty, that's absolutely fine. But I'll also take your brilliant expertise too.
I've been saying Chelsea all season, and I don't want to change now because there's only two games left. So if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm going to stick with Chelsea to win the league. But I think the Spurs game is going to be fascinating. Manchester United are not an easy team to play against, but I also think for them, it'll depend on how they did in the FA Cup final. You know, that will impact it. For Manchester City, Villa were their bogey team last season, and I'm sure Villa would absolutely love to have an impact on the title race at Villa Park, last game of the season. They'd relish that. So I'll stick with what I said, but honestly, it can go either way.
I think it's that. Like, I want Man City to win the title. I think it would be amazing. But I also think, like, this was the weekend that was the real pivot turning point. I was like, this is the weekend that everything could have been effectively put to bed. And Chelsea climbed out of the coffin and woke up. And I was just like, oh!
It's like someone had been knocked out and they were on 8, 9 and see, they're like, nope, not yet, not quite.
Gotcha. It was, yeah. So I do think it's more swinging towards, they will have found so much confidence in coming from a near death situation to think, okay, well, we still have it in our power. But I do have to agree, Spurs are on absolute flying form at the moment, full of confidence themselves going into an FA Cup final, and also Manchester United at Old Trafford, like, they are not.
I'll tell you what though, Chelsea will break now. They have time before their next match, right? They've had a few players like your Myra Ramirez. I don't know how the extent of that injury, but if she's back, she could be a huge like coup for them going into that game. The fact that they've got a little bit of time now ahead of that game rather than having to go knocked out by Barcelona, get up, play Liverpool, mm-hmm. you know, knocked down by Barcelona, by Liverpool, get up, play against Bristol. You know, at least they've got a little bit of time, you know, to fully focus, and they will be fully focusing on that game. They won't be thinking about Manchester United, because Manchester United, it won't really matter as much. It won't matter mm-hmm. if they lose against Tottenham. So,
true story.
It'll be fascinating.
Well, they've now got two other reasons to really hone in on winning the title. It was a very emotional weekend, not just because Emma Hayes' last game at home, but Maren Mjelde and Fran Kirby announced they would also be leaving the club at the end of the season. All the way back in 2015, Kirby was signed from Reading for a British record fee at the time. I mean, Rach, what were your thoughts when you saw this news? I mean, like, she's the Blues' all-time leading goal scorer, 115 goals, 205 appearances for Chelsea. She's had she's helped them win 15 trophies, 6 Super League titles, 5 FA Cups, 2 League Cups, and 1 Community Shield. I mean, the impact is kind of like, it speaks for itself in a way, but I wasn't necessarily expecting that news. I think she's been on good form. Not goal scoring form, but good form.
I wasn't hugely surprised. She hasn't been getting loads of minutes, and I know part of it was coming back in after injury and building her up into it, but I just think, yeah, I wasn't hugely surprised, and I think she will, obviously, of course, I think she'll probably stay in London potentially. You know, it'll be interesting to see where both of them go. But yeah, probably not the biggest shock, but still mad when you think of a player like that. Because you know when you've got a player who's just the club through and through, mm-hmm. being there through some incredible moments and being such a stalwart, not just for Chelsea, but for England as well. She's been one of those, one in a generational player, you know. And also know how good a relationship she had with Emma Hayes, how important Emma Hayes was for her when she was going through her health issues and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, she's spoken up on a lot of different things that she's gone through in her career and been really good vocally, which I'm sure has helped an awful lot of people as well. So, you know, I'm glad she's not out of the game at all. I'm glad she's still staying, and I would hope in the WSL, but it will be weird not to see Fran Kirby wearing a Chelsea shirt.
All day. I think, yeah, she's been such a massive advocate. And I think in terms of sort of her speaking out on things, obviously the coming back from the pericarditis was obviously difficult. But also where she's come back from injury and then sort of found her, you know, space being taken by people like Sam Kerr or Pernille Harder. And instead of sort of being like, OK, well, you know, you've got in these superstar signings, I'm kind of resigned to the bench. I mean, when we saw the whole like Kirby situation with, I mean, that was ridiculous. So a combination of 59 goals, Chelsea winning the domestic treble in 2020-2021, and I think that was probably like her absolute shining glory, like the moment, like the sort of diamond on her crown as such. But I think it's interesting that sort of we've seen these kind of conversations now being had about which players are staying on. Obviously Bonpasta's kind of like on the edge. I'm just sort of wondering maybe when these conversations, or how, you know, progressive these conversations are being had between sort of what Bonpasta wants to do with Chelsea and where she sees certain players fitting.
I think, I'm sure she will want to have her own influence, and but whether we'll see that immediately as soon as she comes in, if she comes in, as soon as she comes in, is a different story. I think Emma Hayes has always done a good job of forward planning. And I think we always talk about the depth and we think about some of the players that might be on loan or whatever that might be. Like, there is a future in that squad already, and you've got players who are kind of at their peak as well as youngsters. Mm-hmm. So like, you don't necessarily need to bring in a load more people. I think there's a very good and exciting squad there, but I'm sure she will want to sprinkle a little bit of Bonpasta on it.
Well, we've got a question in from Olive on Instagram. She said, where do we think Superfran is going? My thoughts...
Crystal Palace.
Are the NWS Palace? I mean, to be fair, I honestly... Like, it was a surprise when Daly went to Villa, and you think, well, actually, this is what's happening now. You know, Palace will be wanting to build a squad. They'll be wanting to build it out of experienced people who have been the WSL, who have won trophies, who can keep them in the league. It could happen. But I also have a kind of inkling that the NWSL might call. I just have this... I feel like the NWSL are kind of like poaching players sort of around the sort of senior kind of late 20s, early 30s vibe, who have, you know, achieved massive things with the club to kind of bolster some of their teams. We saw the same thing with Ashuala. We saw the same thing with Jen Beattie. I just think like Fran Kirby kind of sits in that bracket. So I wouldn't be surprised if she makes a move to the US. Rachel, shaking your head.
I think she'll stay in London. Maybe Spurs. I don't know. Could depend. Will they hang on to Grace Clinton? Could there be an opening there in that 10 role that Fran Kirby could fill potentially? I don't know. That would be a huge coup. Bring her back with Beth England. Bring Marin in as well. And also, I'm just going to give Marin a little shout out, because I know we talk a lot about Fran Kirby and how exceptionally gifted and generational she is. But Marin Mjelde is another true blue through and through, and her shining moment. And I was thinking about this when I was prepping for it. I went back and watched the last 5 minutes of that quarterfinal against Lyon last season in the Champions League at Stamford Bridge, when they got the penalty in the final minute of injury time, of extra time. And Maren Mjelde stepped up, and there was a whole furore around the penalty. She was ready to take it, and then the Lyon players were kicking off, and she had to pick up the ball and step back again. And that moment will live in Chelsea fans' minds forever. And like, even watching the players on the sideline during it, Emma Hayes couldn't watch. Like, that was such a defining moment, and she'll be remembered for that. And then she stepped up and took the first penalty and scored that as well. So those little moments that they gave fans and gave the club will be remembered forever. So a little shout out for her.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Right, let's get stuck into Liverpool Man United. Liverpool beat Man United 1-0 to move 3 points clear of them in fourth in the WSL and just 4 days after beating Chelsea. I mean, we've already kind of touched on it, but it kind of felt like a bit of a massive moment. Do we think that kind of signals Liverpool coming or becoming part of the next big five next season? Are we seeing expansion of the top?
What I'm not going to do, I'm going to learn my lessons from Aston Villa, from Spurs, from Everton. And I'm not going to get ahead of myself and get overly excited and put a whole heap of pressure on Liverpool. I think if they made top six again next season, that's what they would be aiming for.
The consistency. Rather than,
because this is what is lacking in the teams that aren't in the top four. It's consistency. Mm-hmm. And they need to have these repetitive experiences to bed them in, those moments in front of goal, beating the top teams. They need to become a regular thing rather than those one-off moments in a season. Now, it's not really been a one-off moment in a season, to be fair, for Liverpool, but it's also then the beating of the teams in and around you where you're expected to do that. So I'm not going to get ahead of myself. If they finish top six next season, brilliant. I think for them, it'll be that consistency. Go and do it again next season. Mm-hmm. That's where the other teams have lacked. When they've had that good season, they've then come back down again. And you have to give them credit because they've had some injuries to key players this season, which they managed to ride out. Their new signings, key, so key. Matt Beard, incredible manager, very underrated, I think, in this league. And he's been brilliant. And he's been really good at going, what piece do I need to fit in this puzzle that will just slot in right, hit the ground running, and we don't kind of have to wait and say, oh, they need this long to train with the team. And they've come in, they've settled in, and they've made such a difference. And there's been so many players that have stood out. Marie Hobinger, I think we've touched on. Enderby, you know, their back line, their defence has been really good. And again, they've had defensive injuries. They've had Fahi out, they've had Hines out for extended periods, and they've still managed to sustain that tight back line. They think they have 7 clean sheets, which I think only 2 other teams can say that in the league. I've been really impressed, and it's that consistency that you'll want to see next season and whether they can go again and pull off those results, similar results.
I mean, and talking of consistency, you go from beating a massive team like Chelsea in a kind of unexpected result, definitely with the amount of goals being scored, and then you go into Manchester United and you put in the same level of effort, same level of kind of, you know, potential like that there was in the previous game. And I think that's the consistency, I suppose, that we're talking about. Because, I mean, when you kind of look at that game, Man United had barely created a few sort of clear-cut chances, while Liverpool kind of went forward in numbers, scored another set-piece goal after getting 3 against Chelsea. I mean, they were on absolute fire. I think, you know, some of the Koivisto chances, again, that sort of header that hit the post and then sort of followed up and it went wide. And you can see how much of an impact Liverpool's front line is making, because Earps is getting more and more fuming as the game goes on with how sort of lacklustre the defence are being. But yeah, I mean, but do we think there sort of needs to be a more consistent goal scorer to sort of top off Liverpool's shopping list in the summer though? They've scored kind of 10 fewer goals than Manchester United this season.
Now, I think they will probably make some signings and that might be in the form of a number 9. But I think they're a very attractive prospect as well. They're moving grounds. They've got great training facilities, and that would be really attractive for people coming in.
Passionate manager.
Yeah, and I think it might help, but I also think, as I said, it's about consistency in those and experiences in those moments. And they, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. They'll have a season where they're creating loads. Great. They need to do that again, where a player is like, I'm actually used to this now. I'm used to being in front of goal, having an opportunity against Manchester United as a fullback. It's not going to be a stress, if you know what I mean. I have the experience. I'm comfortable enough to know that I can score that. So I think it's just an element of they've built that experience now this season, that next season it will be less of a, oh my God, we're winning 3-2 against Chelsea kind of vibe. They were like, yeah, we're winning 3-2 against Chelsea. Let's get another goal. And it's that experience, I think, that they've built this season, which will stand to them. So yes, they might get in a more potent goal scorer, but I also think they know that they've got some very good goal scorers in the squad that have now had a season to settle.
I mean, we've got to really look at like Liverpool's progress this season. I mean, you look at sort of, you know, it's a team that finished seventh in the season last season with 23 points and a minus 15 goal difference. We move forward 12 months and now we've got a team who's sitting in fourth, plus four goal difference and 38 points. And they're taking the likes of Chelsea and Man United and Arsenal scalps. But like you said, Rach, you do kind of see games like Leicester where you think, oh, come on, that's so frustrating. You've done so well against the big teams. But you know, for you, like, what do you think has been the sort of big sort of factor in their turnaround from last year?
I think what's really important with Liverpool is they're not over-reliant on one player, which I think has massively stood to them. They've got a really solid defensive line, which you saw from the get-go, the way they set up against Arsenal was really difficult for teams to deal with. You know, we're seeing the impact of their set pieces, for example. Like, they're getting all those little bits right and getting really good at piecing them all together across the 90 minutes. They're really bought into how Matt Beard wants to play. They've really nailed their press. They're really good defensively. Midfield is really clicking. You know, there's lots of little bits that are just working really well together. And as I kind of touched on earlier, his ability to find the right pieces, they're just really just gelling so well together. So yeah, I think it's a lot of different factors all falling into place at the same time. And I think, as I said, and it's the word of the pod, of the episode, is that consistency next season.
Absolutely. I think you've got this beautiful blend also of kind of youth and experience. I mean, you look at someone like Kerry Holland, who sort of leads that line. She's kind of like setting the tone for how they want the game to go. I mean, some of the shots that she was getting away, and even there was this beautiful pass in that Liverpool-Chelsea game. It was pass of the year. They should have that as an award. It was stunning. The curve on it, the float on it was absolutely beautiful. But like, you can see how much it means to the players. And there's this kind of like family atmosphere that seems to be building at the club. I mean, that, I don't know, you know, the bad foul on Koivisto, which he sort of hit her head against the advertising banners. Yes, Matt Beard received a red card because he was so passionate about the fact that, you know, he was really protective over the players. So, you know, all the players came over to kind of see whether she was okay and stuff. It looked like a really nasty, nasty knock. But yeah, I just feel there's a real positive vibe, and they've kind of quietly gone about their business this year. There's not really been that kind of sense of, you know, really, you know, seeing what Liverpool are up to. They've kind of like, they've gone off the radar, I think, for a lot of this season. It's only now towards the end of it where they have found that consistency and definitely taken, you know, scouts from the top four that everyone's like, oh, hold on a second, they're really making moves in the WSL. So yeah, like you said, I think absolutely want to see them head in the right direction. Absolutely you want it to be consistent, but absolutely let's learn from our mistakes and not make it a Villa situation. So yeah. And as a beautiful segue into our third and final section, Villa news. Carla Ward has announced that she will step down as Aston Villa head coach at the end of the season. It's understood that the club were keen to reach an agreement, but it was Ward who wanted to go, and she cited a desire to prioritise other important things such as my daughter and the rest of my family life. I mean, we've always had a really soft spot for Carla Ward. She's obviously been on the pod, but yeah, I wasn't expecting this at all. I kind of felt like she went from last season, Villa did really, really well. This season, things have fallen a bit flat. But again, not a reason to panic. It's just one of those seasons. And I expected next season was going to be the sort of like step up to, you know, getting back to, you know, Villa former glory, essentially. But Rach, what was your kind of reaction to the news? How did you feel when you saw it?
I wasn't hugely surprised, to be honest. Sorry.
Could have told me.
I think Carla will do well at a club that's really, and this is no disrespect to Villa, but that has a better budget, that's, you know, really gunning to try and get into the top six and get into the top four and have that real desire. And I think she'd do really well with more resources at her fingertips. I think what she's done at Aston Villa with the kind of investment they have there has been brilliant. I think the players she has managed to get in who've wanted to play for her tell you a lot about what she's like as a manager. But I think it's been hard work. She went very quickly from Birmingham to Aston Villa. And, you know, first season was difficult, obviously had that great season. But again, it's that fight and that drive. And, you know, she said that she's probably learns a lot from these kind of moments. But yeah, it can be hard. I know she lives in Sheffield. She's driving down 2 hours every day to training, you know, and that takes a lot out of you. And we've heard Emma Hayes speak on it really well as well, is that work-life balance is almost non-existent in football, I guess. And, you know, you can understand she's got a young daughter that she wants to spend time with her and take a bit of a break and have a bit of pressure off. But I wouldn't be surprised if she was back coaching next season. And I hope she is. I don't think like she's going to leave the WSL. Whether she takes a bit of time, I don't know. But, you know, there are some positions available.
I think it's that. I don't see this sort of being a sort of end of her managerial career at all. I think, you know, she's just getting started and she's a young manager and she's already proved herself so much in the WSL. I mean, I was sort of looking back through some of the stats and she was over 140 games across the WSL and Women's Championship that she's managed. And she's still sort of one of the spring chickens of the WSL management squads. But a lot of people have spoken sort of about the support that WSL managers and Women's Championship managers are receiving. Do we think maybe that more needs to be done to kind of support managers in that way, especially in terms of mental health? And, you know, Emma's just spoken recently about, you know, the pressure that she, you know, she's under. Do we think that needs to improve? Because a lot of the focus of the conversations, understandably, has been on, you know, player welfare. But, you know, the coaches and managers' welfare has sort of taken a bit of a backseat, I suppose, in discussions.
Absolutely. Something I spoke to Rhianne Skinner about, and she spoke really well on it. Myself and Emma Sanders did a press conference before a game, and I don't think there was many others on it, and we just kind of ended up, it was almost like a bit of a round table with the three of us, and Emma wrote a really good article on that managerial support. And I think the thing is, like, you know, we can all agree that the amount of attention the game has gotten has massively increased, which means that the amount of chat about it on social media has increased, and, you know, there is that increase in toxicity on social media. And I think, you know, when a player has a bad game, they'll get abuse on social. And it's ridiculous. Like, it's not something that they don't need to be told. They've had, like, a player knows if they've missed sitters. They don't need to be told that. They mm-hmm. something they're going to work on. When a manager has a bad run, people are calling for them to be sacked, and that's their livelihoods. And I think Emma Hayes, again, of course, and I think Rhianne Skinner as well, was saying this isn't a game where they're earning the kind of money where, you know, moving jobs or leaving a job is necessarily never an easy thing, but financially it's a very difficult burden. And I know they do get some support, but, you know, no, it's not enough. If it's not enough for the players, it's definitely not enough for the managers and the support mm-hmm. staff. And, you know, when teams are going through difficult times, it affects the managers just as much, if not more so, because they're the ones expected to find the solutions, and they're the ones. They may not be playing on the pitch for those 90 minutes, but it's every other minute of the day that they're working out. How do we change this? Where do we need to improve? You know, all of that kind of stuff. And that's an awful lot of pressure that you have to deal with. And we touched on it with Gareth Taylor when I spoke to him mm-hmm. about, you know, when he comes home, who supports him, who he chats to, what does he do that kind of takes his mind off things? And I think he was saying that his wife doesn't really watch that much football. So actually it's quite nice to come in and speak to someone else from a completely different perspective. So yeah, it's a really interesting one. I know a lot of managers speak to each other, but I think sometimes maybe we forget that, you know, when a team loses a match, a manager is going to be sad too. Or, you know, if they're having a difficult time, they're the ones that have to front up to the media every week mm-hmm. and talk to them. And equally, it's our job to ask them the questions. None of us like to stand in front of a manager that's just lost and ask them to talk about it. It's a shit thing for both of us to have to do, but it has to be done. So where that additional support can come in, I think it's absolutely necessary.
Well, we had the incredible pod last, it wasn't even that long ago, with Marianne Spacey of Southampton, who's just announced her new role as director of football, women and girls football at Southampton. So congrats to her. And as she sort of made the same point that, you know, we keep on sort of having discussions around sort of players, but there's not always that kind of like check-in points for managers to say, like, how are you doing personally? How are you coping with this? Because it's one of those jobs, like you said, Rach, like you don't really ever switch off. Like you're always thinking, how can we improve? How do we get that 1%? What does next season look like? Who are we going to be bringing in? Like it encompasses like recruitment, strategy, you know, the girls' side of things, you know, bringing players up. It's, you know, how do you manage not only the players, but also your own coaching staff? You know, you're still managing managing your physios, your
and the different personalities.
Like it's literally that, and it's like you're having to manage 22 different personalities who, or 25, 26 sometimes, and they all want to be on that pitch. They all want the same thing. Like, when do you ever have a job where you have to manage 30 people who, when there's only 11 spaces every single week to kind of be on the pitch? You're always going to be upsetting someone or disappointing someone. And that's a burden for, you know, you've got to make those tough calls every single week. And that's a burden that kind of sits with them. Like, in my mind, there's this kind of like beautiful WSL, Women's Championship, like WhatsApp group. Everyone's like, oh, mate, you had a good one. I really saw that. I hope you're okay. If you want to go for Nando's later, give me a shout. And everyone's sort of like, I don't know, checks in on each other.
Yona's,
but I don't know
messaging
whether that
Emma going, I'll do my best.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
If you say something about black cats, I'll say something like later next week. Or like... Or if you let me win this one, then I'll take the title, but I'll pay for Nando's next time. That kind of
can't
vibe.
Can't take off. Yeah, but we'll beat City, all right?
Yeah.
That's not
in
what
my
happens.
Head,
that was a joke.
That's what happens. Getting back to Villa, so we've got a great question from Martin. He said, what do Villa do now? They've obviously got the news that Carla Ward's going to be leaving. They've not had the best season. You know, a big part of, like you say, Carla Ward's success has been that she's brought in this incredible players like, you know, Van Domselaar, Ebony Salmon, Anna Patton, Jordan Nobbs, Rachel Daly in her time. But do we kind of think that that's going to be enough to kind of get them back on the road, or do we think actually it's going to be quite an unsettling bit of news for them?
Okay, firstly, on the kind of back of they haven't had a great season, I think we look at them now, they're sitting in seventh, they're 4 points off Spurs, who are sitting in sixth, and Spurs are getting a huge amount of credit for the unbelievable season they've had. And I just think sometimes we need to put that into context, right? Villa are one place below Spurs. They had a terrible start to the season. And actually, and they've had some significant injuries. They've had players go on the January transfer window. So actually, in the wider context of things, it's probably not been as bad as maybe we think. I am worried about the players who will stick around or won't stick around if Carla's leaving. There's a bit of a concern there because I know that she was a big draw for some of these players coming into the club. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the summer. And then I think knowing where they're going to go next will very much depend on how the club react to that, who they target in terms of bringing new players in, etc. And they will need to bring new players in, even if they don't lose any. They'll need to bring more players in. They need depth. So I think, yeah, I am a little worried in terms of that investment, but that's what's going to tell us what they're trying to do with the club, is how they react to Carla going and how they, you know, deal with the summer transfers and that kind of thing.
I feel like sometimes adversity is a good thing for a team to go through. I mean, off the back of, I mean, you know, putting context into, you know, what you were saying about them being a bad season. It's a bad season in the context of the season previously. But like you said, it's not a disaster season. They've not been sort of like, you know, Bristol City level kind of thing. And you won't be with sort of player the talent that you've got. But I do think sometimes they're, you know, when we see teams that have a new manager in, you kind of get that new manager burst where you kind of have that, okay, I want to impress. I want to, you know, make sure that I'm getting my starting spot back. It might be an opportunity for other players to kind of get a bit of a look in. So I think there's definitely potential there for kind of Villa to feel a bit more invigorated, I think, under new management. And especially, like, I think, you know, Carla has a really good relationship with the players. She would have talked about this. She would have, you know, given them a bit of a heads up about what the situation was going to be. So they've not come into this blindly, and I think they'll want the best for Carla, especially if, you know, the reason for the move has definitely been sort of more, you know, personal reasons and wanting to spend time with family, which is completely understandable. So yeah, I'm kind of excited for Villa's season. I just don't know. I can't predict it. Thank you so much for listening. Rach, where are you heading off to this weekend?
Chloe, it's the FA Cup friggin' final.
Is it? What? Oh my God, it's going to be such an exciting game. I honestly cannot contain myself. I've got really mixed loyalties on it. I'm like,
you bloody do.
Yeah.
You'll be in with a half and half scarf, won't you?
That's exactly what I'm going to wear. Because I'm kind of like, I think I'm going with a Man United fan. I'm going with the Man United lot. So I kind of feel like, and obviously that's my team that I've supported this entire time. But also, like, I have such a personal, like, connection with the Spurs girls, especially, like, you know, Jess Naz, Ash Neville, like the ones that the sort of OGs that were there. And to see them go from, you know, what we were to lifting the FA Cup would be absolutely phenomenal. But
you're going to be Manchester Hotspur, or Tottenham United.
Tottenham United is the worst. But effectively, yeah. I mean,
flagpole
in the sand. Yeah, okay, right, fine. Okay. Do you actually think Spurs?
Oh, flagpole in the sand.
Yeah, It's been a while since we've flagpoled in the sand.
I think United in extra time.
Oof.
I do think it's going to go all the way.
I think penalties might be the fairest way to decide it. I think like it's going to be so evenly matched that I think only penalties is going to come down to crunch time.
I was going to say tactically, I think Robert's quite good at going. I think they've come back from being behind like 9 times this season and won it. And I think he'd be quite good if Manchester United are good in the opening half, because they've got the experience of being at Wembley before, that Robert could be quite good at going, okay, in the second half, here's what we need to do. So it just depends. Yeah, it depends on the start.
I actually think if it goes to penalties, Spurs could win it.
But Mary,
but I do think it would. No, but yeah, Becky Spencer is pretty decent on the old pens as well.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So
goalkeeper heroes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a matchup, and it's kind of a matchup that I want to see. I mean, I want to get my money's worth. I want the full game. I want the 30 minutes. And I don't want the penalties at the end, please. That would be absolutely great. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter /X. I am at Morgie_89. Rach is at Girls on the Ball, and we are at Upfront_Pod. You can also find us on YouTube at Upfront Pod. See you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with The Second Tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.